Next on BYUSN, where will Cougar football be in the Big 12 preseason poll? We'll tell you where we have Brigham headed into the season. Plus, which players deserve to be named to the all-preseason Big 12 team?
Speaking of the Big 12, is the Big 12 conference about to level the financial playing field? We'll get Blaine Fowler's take on where he would put BYU in the preseason poll. Plus, BYU Sports Information Directors Brett Pine and Duff Tittle stop by to discuss their new book, 100 Years of BYU Football. And you can't talk football at BYU without quarterbacks. And our best quarterback bracket rolls on. Matt Paul and Steve Sarkisian today.
Oh, that's going to be fun. Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. It is Thursday, June 13th. I'm Jerem Jordan. He is new Big 12 team name creator, Jason Shepherd.
I don't even remember how this topic got brought up, but we spent a lot of time having fun with this.
Yes, we did. Someone online said, yeah, if you could rename team name, what would you do? So we came up with Big 12.
All the Big 12 teams, we've renamed, we've given them new
including
mascots.
BYU.
Yes, including, like, of course, we're going to include ourselves here.
So let's walk through it. Yeah.
Okay, so let's start with, we'll start with West Virginia. How about the West Virginia Country Roads?
Lean into the John Denver song,
that's
course.
Right. It's a great song.
I have a sister
song.
And brother-in-law, obviously, and fam who live in West Virginia. They sing that song all the time.
The Cincinnati Kelseys?
Yeah, I got to do it.
I mean, it's the...
It's on brand. Makes sense.
How about the Kansas Rock Chalks?
Just go right into the nickname.
Having experienced them doing the Rock Chalk chant, it was pretty sweet, by the way.
Yeah.
The Baylor Magnolias.
Magnolia Farms.
Right
I like
into
that.
Chip and Joe.
Comes with some recipes. That's cool.
What about Colorado there?
The Primes. Well, Deanne will be gone in a couple years, so they'll have to adjust it. But yeah,
they'll
Colorado.
Have to rebrand.
Okay, what else do you have?
Let's see. We've got the, and this one is on multiple levels, the Utah Thorns. Think about it. It's very clever. Just think about it. Okay?
Just that we're not going to explain it. Just think about it.
Think about it.
I hate Utah.
Thank you,
then
Max.
We went with the UCF Mice.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, Disney,
yeah.
Mickey Mouse.
Rockets was considered that.
Yes. Yeah. All right, the Iowa State Clones.
To me, this is, we're going to keep the Cyclone
sure.
idea, but it's the Star Wars clones. They ink a deal with Disney. Very lucrative.
All right, how about the Arizona Saguaros?
Oh, the desert?
Yeah.
The cactus?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Texas Tech Oilers.
Too much oil
yes.
in West Texas not to do that.
All right, BYU. The Stone Cold Sobers.
We know
lean
what we
right
are.
Into it.
We know what we
Look,
are.
We're proud of this. We're not hiding from this.
A little chocolate milk. In there?
The Houston Red Cougars.
It's just to distinguish
It's like
from
we
BYU.
Gotta differentiate.
Nice.
The Arizona State Dry Heat.
I wish that was in quotations. It's not a humid heat, it's a dry heat.
It's a dry heat. The Kansas State Little Apples.
You gotta distinguish the Manhattan.
Because of Manhattan,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
This one was you had a great idea with this one.
Just no TCU anymore. We just call them the Fort Worth, and then you said Stockyards.
Fort Worth is known for is the Stockyards.
Just straight into the brand.
And then because of one of the greatest post-game press conference, I think it was post-game, the Oklahoma State 40-year-olds.
Mike Gundy said, I'm 40 years old, I'm a man.
I'm a man, I'm 40.
I'm 40.
Yeah, so there you
go. 40-year-old.
Just a little bit of fun.
There you go. Congratulations to all of our Big 12 homies who just got a new team name. Let's go. There's a lot going on this morning. Some news, some sources relative to the Big 12 and financial stuff. We just had another piece of news from Pete Thamel come out in addition to what we were planning on talking about here in a moment. We'll get to that in just a sec. All rise and shout. It's time for What's Trending.
There was a lot to like about year one. It does take time. It doesn't all happen at once.
All I want to do is win and compete.
For special seasons, you need special players.
You guys ready? All right, the season is coming up, man. We're going to be in fall camp at the end of next month, so let's go. Bill Steele has released his college football preview. Let's react to some of that information, see what we think, Shep. 73rd overall in the power poll. 54th in recruiting, which is higher than I thought, actually. BYU did better than we thought. 31st in experience. This is always the thing that's mentioned relative to age, but good experience, bringing a lot of guys back. 23rd toughest schedule. We know it's a tough one. Unfortunately, no position group in his top 40 there. What do you think of some of this info?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that stands out to me is the 23rd toughest schedule. We know that. We've talked about that.
Utah, Kansas State,
And a lot
Iowa
of these
State,
really
Kansas.
Tough ones you know, you're at home. It's your home schedule.
For the five are at home, which is fun.
Which, look, I mean, normally you would say, you'd think, oh, well, good. At least you're getting your tough games at home, but it's still your toughest games.
And I would rather have those on the road, honestly. Not for an entertainment standpoint. Just pure ability to win said games.
Yeah.
But it's going to be fun because BYU is going to pull off some upsets.
I'm with you. I'm with you. The 54th in recruiting, I like that. 73rd in the power poll. What I'm hoping is that starts to, you know, inch its way up, and you'd love to get you top 50.
BYU should walk in this space. BYU does not deserve to be super high preseason anywhere with anybody. That's okay, because who cares about preseason? Oh, we do. We have to talk about it on
unless our team's really, really high. No,
I'm more
concerned.
Right. We like it. It's fun. But I'm talking like what actually matters is how you perform at the end of the season. So preseason, if you're underwhelmed, if you're underrated, whatever. It's okay. All right. Big 12 rankings. Overall, 14th. 14th, so third lowest.
Yeah.
Toughest schedule. Fourth. Special team 6th. Phil Steele's very high on special teams at BYU. TBD on the punter, right? Sam Vanderhaar coming over from Pittsburgh. Will Farron, proven great kicker, finished really strong with the game-tying field goal at Oklahoma State to send it to OT. Quarterback's 13th, so fourth lowest. How do you feel about those?
I mean, the one that stands out to me, well, the two. The overall, he's got them 14 out of 16. And then the quarterbacks. That is the biggest question mark. And it just happens to be at the position that's most important on the team.
Yep.
And so there's just a lot of unknowns about Jake Retzlaff and Gary Bohannon and all the other guys that are in the mix.
The three other guys who have started FBS.
So it's, you know, those are the things that stand out. And that's the question mark. That will be the question mark that we will follow through all of camp, through the first couple of weeks, and quite frankly, through the entire season is, first of all, who the quarterback is, but then how that quarterback develops. Certainly, if it's Jake Retzlaff, you're talking about development. If it's Gary Bohannon, it's can he find the type of game that he had a couple of years ago when he was at Baylor, before all the injuries.
He had a reliable run game and a good defense.
Yeah.
If BYU has that, the quarterback is set up for success.
Yep.
So it's hard to disagree with anyone saying BYU's bottom four in some of this stuff. Again, that's okay. It doesn't really matter. If BYU gets into the season and that is reflected accurately, that's going to be a bummer. But BYU can overcome said rankings. They didn't perform well last year, and similar people are back.
Yep.
So why would it be grossly different? That's sort of the mentality of preseason polls and discussions relative to BYU football right now. Okay, all Big 12 players. Tyler Batty on the first team.
Yep.
This is a guy who I think will be preseason first team for the Big 12. Jack Kelly, third team at linebacker. Cornerback Jacob Robinson, third team. Waylon Lapu'ahu on the fourth team. Is anybody missing? Should anybody have been in the fourth team up to the first team that wasn't listed?
I can't think of any glaring misses on this yet. Certainly Tyler Batty is, you know, justified in being where he is on Phil Steele's, you know, list.
Returning guy with production.
Yes. I think Tyler is going to have a massive year this year.
In the form of what?
I think in the form of pressures. I think his being able to maybe drop back a little bit.
You calling for an interception?
I'm calling for another
fake punt?
I'm not calling for anything. I just like the mentality that Tyler's coming back into this season with something to prove.
Payson Onion Days mentality.
I like it.
Let's go.
And I like the fact that Jacob Robinson is third team. Jacob Robinson is a really good player.
Dude has a pick six. Dude has, five plus picks? Like, come on. You're talking about, the production from Tyler Batty. In his career, 165 tackles, 26 and a half TFLs, 15 sacks in 4 seasons. Had 5.5 last year. I think get to the 7 mark this year. Increase those pressures. Increase some of those numbers. A couple forced fumbles and whatnot. Yeah, I think Tyler Batty, we hope, is a guy that's picked on day 3 of the NFL draft next year. Let's go. I do think Ben Bywater should have been in there somewhere. He didn't play a ton of games last year, but his production throughout his career is similar to Batty in that he is returning a leader, capable, and because of that shoulder injury, you just kind of forget about him. But I think he should have been in the top 4 teams of linebackers in the Big 12. Now, with that said, there's 16 teams now. It is harder to be all conference when there are more teams in the league. Just the logistics of that, not to mention the influx of good teams coming in. Utah's going to bring in good players. Colorado certainly has splashy players out of the portal for the most part. Are they going to make a bowl game and make a splash in the league? That's TBD. But that's some pretty interesting stuff. We were going to share our preseason football media poll stuff.
There's so much other stuff going on.
There's too much going on with the Big 12. So we move on to topic two, Shep, with some big information this morning.
Yeah, and this was we were going to be going to something else, and then this happened just within the last couple of minutes. Pete Thamel is reporting that the Big 12 is exploring selling its naming rights and getting a title sponsor for the conference. And this is interesting, too, because it wouldn't be like the company Big 12 Conference. It's actually saying potentially that the sponsorship name would actually replace the word big. And so it could be the whatever sponsor 12 conference.
The Dr. Pepper 12.
The Dr. Pepper 12 conference.
Whatever.
Yes.
The Nike 12.
Yes. Yeah. So this is.
That would be interesting.
So just a couple of other points to talk about.
He says, I don't love it.
He says that this is something that they've looked into quite a bit.
I'm sure.
And that this is something that could happen within a couple of months if they decide to go with any sponsor. And obviously, you mentioned, Dr. Pepper.
Right.
That obviously makes a lot of sense.
I bring up the connection relative to Baylor and Texas and Waco.
And you've got their connection to the conference already in terms of they are a massive sponsorship of
it. How about
anyway.
Coke? This is a Coke school?
Yeah. So anyway, that's there. And look, it's another sign or another form of revenue. It's another form of revenue coming into the conference, which is sort of the theme of the morning in terms of the Big 12.
It's the theme of college sports. It really is. How are we going to match all this cash influx to do the, to produce professional athleticism, which is what it is? There's no amateurism. That's dead. You're going to be paying players soon after this settlement. You've got to have more cash to make up for the money that you're not keeping as the school that you now need to give out in NIL, not only back pay, but current pay to those players. That is really interesting to me. I don't love it because it feels like a sellout a little bit. Feels like Wayne's World right now, like opening up the pizza box.
Right.
And like, I would never sell out as you open up Pizza Hut. Because if it's like the Coke 12 or what.
Right.
Now it's NASCAR and there's just a litany of logos everywhere.
And I'm with you.
They've
I don't like that, but that's
it,
the way
I guess.
It is.
They just have to do it. I do appreciate the creativity and the ambition of Brett Yormark and the Big 12 to just try and be in this space where they're not actually competing with the SEC and Big 10. You're just trying to keep up with them. And the ACC and the per-year overall value, that's the real battle. It's with the ACC. Because if you can win that battle and then do what you did with the Pac-12, you may kill another league. You may bring in enough. Like if the Big 12's like, we will get Florida State, Miami, Louisville, the good ones, that you bring in as much as you can, right? Yeah. There are others, of course. But like UNC and who knows. If you can win that battle and like look how much money is coming there, which brings us to private equity.
Yes.
Also, private equity this morning, according to CBS Sports and Dennis Dodd, he is reporting that there is as much as a potential investment of 20% of the league being sold to a private equity company, a firm, for a valuation of up to $800 million to $1 billion of new cash into the league. This is pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's huge.
No league has gone to the private equity sector. Many other sports are doing so. Some with ethical considerations relative to, are we going to take Saudi money? Are we not? This is not that, but I'm talking about generally speaking in sports. What do you make of the potential of that into the league?
I like the out-of-the-box thinking, once again, by Commissioner Yormark, because at the end of the day, what you're trying to do, because right now everybody's judging the differences between these leagues based off of the media rights deal.
Yes.
And so we know where the Big Ten is. We know where the SEC is.
ACC's locked into a long-term deal they don't like.
And so if you have an opportunity to bring in an influx of between $800 million and $1 billion, which would then part of that then would be distributed equally among all of the teams within the conference, you have an opportunity to try and bridge that gap. And there's a quote in here from that article. I wanted to read this to make sure that I think this was one of the more important parts of this. And of course, now I can't find it. Here it is. So add in the cash influx from private equity and the two revenue streams would combine to move the Big 12, quote, much closer to the Big 10 media rights deal, according to a person with intimate knowledge of the proposal. So it's a way, while you're locked in with your media rights, to bring in more money to close that gap. I love the idea. And what you failed to mention in talking about this equity firm is they're based in Luxembourg.
There you go.
So what I'm sensing is you better have your passport ready because football media day in Luxembourg next year.
That would be awesome. So what we can also surmise from the 800 mil to a billion for 15 to 20% of the league is that the league is valuated at about 4 to 5 billion as a company, if you will, which is interesting. Everybody needs cash, as we mentioned. It's not free 90 free, though.
Right.
What they would be looking to do is at some point in the future sell their stake and, quote, exit the investment and make all of that back,
yes,
plus a bunch.
Of course.
As things get more expensive, as obviously inflation increases and the media rights increase over time. A couple interesting things in this article on CBS Sports from Dennis Dodd. They would want the CVC investment firm, mm-hmm, would want the league to stay beyond 2031. That makes sense.
So you got to go long term with this. You got to stay together.
Would the teams in the league want that? Kyle Whittingham had some comments. A year or two ago, mm-hmm, saying I think in the next 2, 3, 5 years, something like this, that it's going to be very different. We may not be in the leagues as currently constituted, and we'll see from there. I am of the opinion that he's probably right in that I don't know that this is all going to look like it looks right now. Will the Big 12 exist in 5 years or after 2031 as it is? Will these leagues continue in the new football-only perhaps thing we have outside the NCAA? Will the NCAA function as is? I'm not sure. But the amount of money required to do all of this, it's private equity is probably the way to go. No league has done it yet. The Big 12 is considering it.
Well, do you think that going this route, if this is what ultimately they're still considering it,
yeah,
but do you think this is seismic enough that if this works, it could put not necessarily an end, but certainly slow down the talk of in 2 to 3 years, everybody is sort of fending for themselves in one super league? You think this could work well enough it halts some of that talk?
It's a good question. Would that prevent you from getting out of the NCAA? Is the NCAA issue money or is it the ability to, well, yeah.
It's both. I know where you're going, and it's both.
It's the random weird rules. It's the handbooks that are too big.
Yes.
It's the transfer issue. They've blown up a few of these traditional things.
Yeah.
The amateurism, the student-athlete part of that. Obviously, they still have to represent your school and go to school.
Yeah.
At what point does school not even matter associated with NCAA athletics? I don't know. I could see a day where it's like the G League, where it's like, well, you rep the school, but we don't actually need you to go to class anymore.
Right.
At certain schools, that's the case. Mm-hmm. They don't really care about the academics. BYU, that's a part of the deal. You got to come here and you got to go to school. It's all changing so quickly. We'll see what this means. Private equity is starting to affect all sorts of sports. Why wouldn't it affect NCAA athletics? And why wouldn't the Big Ten and SEC at some point jump in as well in this space?
Hey.
They don't need it like the Big 12 needs it, but they would keep, if they added that, they would keep their advantage going.
Yeah. You're doing this to bridge the gap. Yeah. And what's going to keep these other conferences that already have more money in terms of the media rights than doing the same thing and then pulling away again? It's what it is. It's an arms race. And you're just trying to top
is.
The next person that makes a really good has a really good idea.
And that arm is pretty muscly right now with the private equity. Let's go. Okay, our question of the day. Where would you put BYU in the Big 12 preseason poll? Coming up in early July, we'll see what the coaches think. We'll have the media polls out. I submitted mine on Tuesday. We'll probably save this perhaps to next week conversation. We've got time. But today, just things happening with Pete Thamel and Dennis Dodd reports with the Big 12. Two different pieces of news this morning. But where would you put BYU in the Big 12 preseason poll? LJ Pearson on next. 16th out of 16
wow.
in football. Because Cougars do best as underdogs. Low expectations. Mm. BYU will shine. Star emoji. Utah, 17th. Laughing emoji. Well played.
Well,
is there any way Utah's outside the top three, by the way?
I guess there's a chance.
I think they'll be top three.
Yeah, I think it's almost assuredly top three.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wonder if they'll be the preseason pick to win it. And that will give plenty of fodder for social media to run with. Continue to weigh in on X, Facebook, and Instagram.
All right, listen to part two of the latest Cougar Tailgate podcast featuring BYU Football Sports Information Directors Duff Tittle and Brett Pine, who, by the way, will be in Studio B a little bit later on. They've got a brand new book, 100 Years of BYU Football. It's on sale now. They were on Cougar Tailgate. Make sure you listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Basically, we're saying listen to that and the interview.
And this.
We're going to do it. Yes, all of it. Blaine Fowler's in the house after the break. Where does he put BYU in the Big 12 preseason poll? Which players deserve to be preseason All-Big 12? What does he think of private equity and name rights in the Big 12 potentially? This is BYU Sports Nation.
The receiving core makes a giant step forward. I think the defense will be significantly better.
Tyler Batty, he's all kinds of ticked off.
Chase Roberts with the score is Darius Lassiter. The touchdown from Jacob Robinson.
Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation on this Thursday, June 13th. I'm Jeremy Jordan alongside Jason Shepherd. We welcome to the program Blaine Fowler, longtime BYU TV sports analyst. Blaine, welcome to the show, man. Let's dive right in. Big 12 discussions this morning. Source of the Big 12 considering two financial boons. First, naming rights could be the, as we joke, the Coke 12 or something like that. What's your reaction to the potential of a naming rights deal as reported by Pete Thamel?
Hey, since there's no longer a Pac-12, maybe it should be the Nike Big 12. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Paging Phil Knight.
Yeah, Uncle Phil chiming in with some cash.
Or Oregon's going to be in the Big 12 or in the Big 10, so I guess that one doesn't work for us. But yeah, it's a really interesting concept, and you wondered when things were going to go that direction. Shep, you mentioned, I was listening to your guys' previous segment, that everybody compares these leagues based on just their television rights, and that's how they're like, well, how's anybody going to compete with the SEC and the Big Ten? You know, the Pac-12 couldn't get those media rights down, and that's how they valued everything. But now all of a sudden you bring private equity in, you bring naming rights in. Now it's like all of these other sources of revenue that brings this revenue stream in that can allow the Big 12, if they do it right, with the kind of commissioner they have that's so plugged into the entertainment business and marketing and all that, that the Big 12 doesn't have to have the same dollar revenue coming in from television rights as the SEC to compete and to have the same type of facilities and the same type of revenue going to each team. So you figured at some point it was going to be privatized. I wonder how the balance between, and you mentioned this, Jerem, between actually going to school and this just being a feeder program for professional sports, how do we keep that balance? Do we really want it to be university-based and these to be so-called student-athletes? Or is this just a minor professional league now? That's the hard part.
So, Blaine, though, I love this idea, but are we basically going to just be in the exact same boat, though, when the other conferences who already have more money because of the media rights, then they decide to go do the private equity, and then that gap then widens again? Is that the inevitable or the inevitability of all this if this works for the Big 12?
I mean, that's the worry of it. But honestly, I just think about it. Is there a commissioner in college sports?
No.
In a better position than the Big 12's commissioner to put these types of deals together? I think he's in, and if you just look at past experience, now, of course, commissioners of other conferences can bring in people that are good at this, but this is the commissioner of the league in your mark that this is what he does. He's so plugged in to monetizing things and marketing things and running sports and entertainment business properties. I think he's in the best position of any commissioner in America to lead out on this and to cooperate and coordinate and get support from corporate folks. While the SEC, somebody may look at it and they go, well, they get more eyeballs on it. Well, that's reflected in the television media rights. But your mark will figure out ways to bring value to whoever the investors are in this. He's so brilliant with the way he does it. He already negotiated a television contract extension that's bigger than we thought because he's talked to these to television entities about, hey, we can do this. This is something we can do that's unique. You can have behind-the-scenes access. We can provide that. He thinks outside of the box. That puts the Big 12 in a great position as we go into this, I guess we can call it a new era of privatizing or monetizing college sports with big business.
It is very interesting, given his background, as you mentioned, relative to marketing and business and Roc Nation and Nets and so on and so forth. Let's see where this goes. In the article from Dennis Dodd in CBS Sports, he talks about how CVC investment firm would want the league to stay together past 2031, the current media rights deal. Do you think that the teams would actually want that? Because the vibe I get from that team up north is that they have bigger ambitions for what they think are greener pastures. But we'll see what college football looks like. What does the NCAA exist past 2031 or in the next 5 years? I don't know. This is moving very quickly, as we've all talked about.
Yeah, and think about this. If this happens, I mean, this could obsolete the NCAA, but it wouldn't obsolete the contracts that league has if they do rights, grant of rights for television rights, for private equity, and they're tied into long-term contracts and the buyout's big. So whether the NCAA exists or not, this maybe gives you stability. And it's interesting, you talk about Utah. Kyle made a couple of comments, Kyle Whittingham, my old roommate, about who knows what's going to happen. I think the deck's going to be reshuffled. I don't know that he ever came out and said, hey, we're going to the Big Ten or we're going to the SEC. If they're going to the Big Ten, wouldn't they be in it right now?
Yes, that's the fan base desire is my vibe.
Right. Kyle made a comment that everybody really read into. And Kyle's comment, I think, was more about everything's so unstable right now. Who knows what – I mean, this thing could all reshuffle again in a few years. I really don't think he was saying – no, we're in the Big 12 short term, and then we're going to get to the SEC, the Big 10. I think he was saying something like exactly what we're talking about right now could change the whole face of college sports. I think he's just looking, going, man, it just feels unsettled still. This doesn't feel like the last of it. Now, I don't know that he saw that private equity and big business was going to come in and have a big role, but I think Kyle's just feeling a little uneasy about the long term of all of it, right? And so that's why he made that comment. Then everybody read into it. Yeah, Utah's – they're going to bigger and better things. They're only going to be in the Big 12 short term. They don't want to be in the Big 12. I think a little bit of misreading of what he said has gone into it. And then the fan base of Utah just grasped onto this saying, yeah, we're going to bigger and better things. Maybe the bigger and better things are being in the Big 12 and having a revenue stream that's double or triple what's currently there with corporate sponsorships and all kinds of things like that. That may be the big change that we see as they talk about it today. It's really an interesting, interesting concept.
Blaine, we're just a couple of weeks away from Football Media Day in Las Vegas. And so obviously that means that the Big 12 preseason media poll will be coming out. And, you know, we've been talking about where BYU should be, where we think they'll be. What do you anticipate in terms of BYU when that media poll comes out?
I think they're going to be toward the bottom. Now, we have a little bit more insight than the rest of the media that will vote on it with some of the people that have come in, some of the people that they brought in as transfers last year that now have a year under their belts. You know, a long talk with Darius Lassiter, and he was talking to me about times last year when Jake's in the game playing quarterback, who's also a new guy that didn't plan on being the guy, planned on making some playing some at the end of the year, but not being the guy down the stretch, right? You have all these young guys, first-year guys in on that offense. Remember, when they started the year, there were 7 first-year transfers on that offense. And Lassiter was saying to me, there were times that Jake would make a check, and I would think to myself, I don't even know what I'm supposed to do. Then he would look over to his right to get some help, and he'd be like, oh, Keelan doesn't know what he's doing either. And Keelan would give him that wide-eyed look like, do you know what route we run on this? And then LJ Martin's in the backfield saying to Jake, hey, what do I do on this play? And Jake's turning around and telling him, and then he turns back around and says, oh, and by the way, the count's on 2, right? You can't underestimate how much impact, and then a bunch of new guys on the offensive line, right? And so 1 year later, I have this sneaking suspicion that Jake getting thrown in the fire is gonna be pretty good if he ends up being the guy and make a big step forward. And then when I talked to Darius, I said, what about now? And Darius says, now? Oh, Keelan, me, LJ, like all of us first-timers. Not only do I know what I'm supposed to do on every play and every check, I know what every other receiver on the field. Now if somebody looks to me, I can be the guy that tells them what they're supposed to do. And now I'm taking my game to the next level, or I'm understanding what this route as a concept is supposed to do to the defense and what my role in that is. That's a giant step. And that giant step, I think, will show itself on the field. BYU's defense was pretty solid last year. I think they take a big step forward. And I think Jack Kelly, and I've said this on this show before, is going to emerge as one of the best linebackers in the league. He's an all Big 12 guy in my estimation, and a great leader. And so they got the folks back they need defensively. So I think BYU's going to surprise some people. If I was putting them in a poll right now, I have them like sixth or seventh in my poll because I know from the inside what
that
I think
high.
They'll do better. Yeah, so I have them way higher than most. To me, there's a group of four or five teams that any one of those could win the league. There's unbelievable parity in this league. Yep. Like, as I was putting mine together, I put West Virginia at 9, and then I asked myself, what the heck are you talking about? Like, how can West Virginia be 9? The way they played the end of the year and having, White back and having Donaldson back at quarterback. And they were one of the most physical teams in the league last year and finished strong. What am I talking about? How can I have them 9? But I have them 9. But to me, West Virginia could finish in the top 4 if they get on a roll. That's how unpredictable this league is. Like, to try to figure it out, there's just so many teams that could step up and so many teams that we may have too big expectations for that I think anyone that acts like they really know what's going to happen is really fooling themselves. Because I'd like to think I know. I have BYU at 7. I know more about them than most because I watched them through all of spring ball. I don't think they're going to be as bad as people think they're going to take a step forward. I have Kansas State winning the league on my ballot.
That's pretty good. I like it. We have plenty of time to discuss and break it all down. Blaine, we appreciate the time. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks, Blaine.
Good to talk to you guys. See ya.
Blaine Fowler on BYU Sports Nation. Hey, 7th tie. If BYU finishes in 7th, sign me up, bro.
But he's right. I mean, there are so many teams, and we saw this in basketball. Every year, that's one of the fun things about the Big 12 is that there are teams that can go one year who are towards the bottom of the conference and then vie for a conference championship. Like, we've seen that multiple times.
There's great parity in football. Will there be an elite team is my concern, though, because for the Big 12 as a whole.
Right.
You need a team that's going to get into the semifinals.
That can represent the conference when you get there.
Yes. And you're hoping for 2 bids, by the way, realistically.
Of course.
You're hoping for 2. You get 1 automatically.
All right. Tune in tomorrow for a BYU Sports Nation Big 12 Roundtable special. Jerem's joined by BYU TV analysts and BYU coaches as they recap BYU's first year in the Big 12 and look ahead to year number 2. That's tomorrow, noon Eastern, on BYU TV and BYU Radio.
Coming up, which current player made the collegiate national team in her sport? The latest from Denver on Zach Wilson and the biggest what if in BYU sports history, not including Brandon Davies, Taysom Hill. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Follow BYU Sports Nation on social media for content throughout the day on Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok.
Welcome back to Studio B. I'm Jeremy. He's Jason. Let's get to today's headlines.
Men's hoops summer practices continue today, featuring some new faces. Look at the social media post from the men's basketball account. Faces like Brody Kozlowski, Elijah Crawford, Kaba Keita, Mawit Mag, as well as some other familiar faces. Things are heating up in the annex.
With 2 scholarships still available.
Yes,
indeed. Women's tennis finishes number 1 in the ITA Mountain Regional Rankings after a 17-8 season where the Cougars went back to the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2007. 3 Cougars are ranked in the top 20 in regionals for singles, 2 pairs in the top 10 for doubles. In addition to her co-Big 12 championship singles title, Bobo Huang was recognized as the region's most improved player.
Claire Little was named to the collegiate national team to play under former BYU men's volleyball coach Chris McGowan. Little becomes the 5th Cougar to ever compete on the team, the others being Aaron Livingston, Heather Knighting, Jen Hampson, and Kate Pryor.
It's fun. They basically train with the national team that's going to go play in the Olympics. They used to kind of go out and compete. Now it's just kind of fun for them to be in the gym.
What
and
an
get
opportunity.
Some exposure.
Yeah.
Karch Karais, the national team coach, is hanging out over there.
Pretty cool stuff.
Zach Wilson continues to take first team snaps with the Denver Broncos. According to the Denver Post, quarterback's coach Davis Webb said this about Wilson.
Yeah, he's had a lot of coaches in his lifetime, and I can relate to that. 6 offensive coordinators in 3 years. So him and I have had a lot of conversations in regards of, hey, this is what you've known, this is why I think you're best at, and let's try to have some meaningful conversation here, as opposed to this is rigid, this is loose. Like, let's just communicate, and whatever your best is, that's what we want. And
in 2021, so what do you make of Odunze going after Puka's record?
I wonder if a rookie quarterback can get him there. And Caleb Williams with the Bears. Certainly Caleb is awesome.
A lot of youth with the Bears Heisman, on offense.
But yeah, do you trust the Bears offense to produce anyone with those numbers right now? I personally do not. I don't think it's going to be touched for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I think Puka is pretty safe. But Roma Dunze is pretty awesome.
Yeah, he's pretty.
Teammates at Washington,
yes,
by the
absolutely.
Way.
Yeah, I think Nakua's record safe for right now.
Yeah, let's give it a couple years.
Yeah.
On Twitter, On3Sports asked the biggest what if in college football history. So, Jason, besides Brandon Davies and Taysom Hill, what's the biggest what-if in BYU history?
Okay, so there's a lot of these. The first one that came to my mind is if there had been replay in Salt Lake City, Brandon Bradley, the knee was down. They said he fumbled.
Yeah.
He didn't. The knee was down first. It was down.
Yeah, it was obvious. Good old SD cameras.
So that would have changed things in terms of the number of, you know, how many Utah won in a row? Whole that changes everything. So that was the one that I came up with.
Greg Rebell's reaction to that on at the time KSL Radio was exactly what we all had, which was no. Okay, mine was, would the Lone Peak 3 have gone to the Sweet 16 if they had stayed together? If that had worked out, would they have gone to a Sweet 16? We were hoping they'd go to a Final Four. The other one I had was, could BYU have made a New Year's Six game if they had beaten Coastal Carolina in 2020? I don't think the bowl, like, probably not.
Probably
given,
not, but I would have
been
loved,
high enough.
Yes,
but it'd be. They weren't negatively affected that much by being 1 yard short. It was actually a triumph. It was like, we credit you with playing,
right,
knowing this on a Wednesday.
Yes.
So those are some of them. I'm sure there's some great ones. Tweet at us,
sure,
if you have some other ones. But those are some that came to mind. But the top two are clearly, if Brandon Davies is playing the whole year in 2011. What happens with
how
the
far can that team
if
go?
If Taysom Hill doesn't have a single injury in his career, does he have a top five Heisman year in 2014? Does BYU go to a New Year's Six?
Yeah,
in 2014.
BYU football.
They have three Power Fives that year. They beat them all.
Yeah,
they beat them all. They'd have to come back against Utah State in that game where he got hurt. But I'd like to think that things could have been pretty special in 2014.
A lot of what ifs. Maybe Marvel could do a.
I gotta
BYU
finish watching season two. By the way, have you watched?
Yeah, I'm up to date.
Yeah, I'm not up to date on
that. Yeah, all right. On the latest episode of the Deep Blue Podcast, I'm joined by former BYU running back Curtis Brown, and we talk about his play on the football field, but he also discusses his conversion to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts.
I've got your summer book reading assignment. It's 100 Years of BYU Football. The authors, Duff Tittle and Brett Pine, are in the house. We discuss the incredible book coming up after the break.
This portion of BYU Sports Nation is presented by Maersk, your e-commerce logistics shipping partner.
Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation in Provo, Utah. Jerem Jordan, Jason Shepherd with you. We've known our next two guests for a long time,
yes,
and they have produced a book. I will be consuming this in the next, I don't know, 8 hours or so, if it's up to me. It is 100 years of BYU football, historic moments, memorable victories, legendary players. Duff Tittle, Brett Piner in the house, the authors who work in the athletic department, sports information. Guys, welcome to the show. Rarely do we have you on camera. We're going.
You guys are usually standing over there watching the athletes.
Exactly.
That's a better place to be. Yeah.
It's great to have you here.
Thanks.
You guys have been friends for a long time. What was it like to write a book together?
In many ways, it's kind of like a bit of a, you know, I don't know, it kind of capsizes our friendship. For all these years, we have known each other a long time, and we've been to a lot of events together, and we've been behind the scenes on the last 25 years of BYU football, and so it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
It probably helps that we know each other pretty well, just because when you're working on a project that big, that kind of magnitude, it's a lot of work, and you have to kind of divide how you're going to do things, and we know each other's strengths and weaknesses probably better than we'd like to, so in that respect, too, I think it was good. It was a fun project.
So take us through the genesis, how this started, how long it took you to, we're talking 100 years of BYU football. It's probably not something you guys did in about 2 weeks. So how long did it take, and what was the genesis of kind of getting this going?
It started with this idea from some previous books that I'd written where I had a lot of material that wasn't used. So we started talking about it maybe 6 or 7 years ago. And then started the writing about 2 years ago. So it was a 2-year process to go through all of this information that we had. And there's over 400 photos in the book too. And that was a huge process, trying to find really unique photos that maybe haven't been seen before.
Yeah, more earnestly, probably the last couple of years, just a lot of research and making it all happen and really deciding that when we knew it was going to be the 100th season, saying, hey, this is the opportunity to tell some of these stories that let people really have a little different appreciation for some of the things that have happened over the history of the program.
And it's pretty fun because you go through chronologically and there's little inserts like, oh, in comes Paul James, in comes Gregor Bell, and so on and so forth. I noticed at the back a little BYU Sports Nation. So thank you for the mention there, which is great. Yeah. And the relationship we've had. Okay, some people are like, well, wait, didn't we start in 1922? World Wars, there was a couple of years where BYU did not play. So this is the 100th season of BYU football. And there'll be a lot of celebration this year around BYU football's 100th season.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of conversation internally on what we're going to do with that celebration. There'll be something going on each game and some other things that are not quite completely figured out yet, so we won't spoil it.
And you got to read the book to know all the history to see the celebration, right? It'll be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a fun year for fans. And when you look at all the history and the legacy of the program, and there's so many ways that people connect with it, whether it was whatever era you happen to be in. You mentioned Paul James. I mean, one of the things we touch on here is how broadcasting really has played a big role in helping BYU football become the brand that it is, and whether that was on the radio side or the television side. And so there's a lot of those things, and everyone's going to connect with different things. And hopefully this season, as fans, as we get ready as an athletic department to announce some of the things we're going to be doing, they'll have those chances to come and just kind of celebrate, you know, the history and how it's meaningful to each one of us in maybe different ways.
So this is for both of you. Despite being as close to the program and its history as you guys are, I'm going to assume along the way there was probably something like, wow, I didn't know that. What did you learn about BYU football that maybe you didn't know going in?
I think on this book particularly, my parents met at BYU in the late 1950s. And I heard stories from my father about how the program wasn't very good, you know, and there was challenges. But we found the reasoning behind that in some stuff that we found in special collections at the BYU.
That's a gold mine, by the way.
Oh, it is. It's
unbelievable. Put on those white gloves. It's fun.
It is. It's an amazing thing to go in there. But we found a lot of stuff that we, even though we've been here, like I said earlier, 25 years plus, yeah, we found a bunch of things. But one of them was the advent of scholarships. And because up until maybe late 1950s, we weren't playing on an even playing field with others, particularly in the state. And so everybody goes, why couldn't we beat, you know, fill in the blank? Or why was the program struggling?
Why were we so good at basketball?
Yes, exactly. Right. Football. Exactly. Yeah. Why were they literally a basketball school?
Yeah.
So that's a chapter that I think is really cool. Especially, it was an aha for us. It was like, okay, we found it out. There
this
it
makes
is.
Sense why we were like, let's
exactly.
bring in Marines.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, and I think you gain a different appreciation for decisions made in administrators and different people. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's President Wilkinson at that point. Later, President Wilkinson also, we were in the midst of, as a program, in the late 50s to mid 60s, we had 6 straight losing seasons. But in that time frame, they determined that they really needed to expand and build the stadium. So on the footprint where the stadium is now is when that took place, that initial Cougar Stadium. And again, it speaks to the fan base, that there's the interest there and really how things exploded and how they were prepared for what ended up happening in the 70s with Lavelle when he took the helm and how things just kind of blew up and the program being successful on a bigger level.
The moment the stadium gets adjusted in some major way, the next year, the quarterback does something crazy or the team does something crazy. I think we need to do it again because it's 64, 65, Virgil Carter is awesome. They win the WAC. 82, 83, Steve Young second in the Heisman. So just saying. We do want to show a picture, and you talked about the personal touch of sort of the memories and the personal connection associated with BYU football. You two at the Miami game in 1990.
Look at those young whippersnappers.
Duff in the back left, Brett in front right there. What do you remember from that night and the connection to perhaps the greatest win in BYU football history?
I think a lot of people ask us that question. What's your greatest moment, having been there for as long as we have? And for me, it's the greatest athletic event I've ever been to. I've been to NBA playoffs. I've been to World Series games. I've been to the Masters a couple times. And that game is, for me, the pinnacle of being a fan. It was magical night. It really was. By the time we got to the fourth quarter, we were all just exhausted. We were. And people forget, no one scored in the fourth quarter, but Miami drove it deep into our territory multiple times, and we came up with defensive play after defensive play. And so by the time that game was over, we all just were exhausted. You can see in that picture that they're rushing the field. We didn't even bother. We're too tired.
Like, I'm tired. I'm going to take a nap.
You're standing the whole time that game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And as you know, watching some of that footage there, Ty was just a magician. And he became the Heisman candidate that night. You know, I mean, he just put on a show. And, you know, when Russell Maryland and his teammate collided, you know, that was pretty epic. But yeah, that was just a great night, a fun night to be a Cougar fan.
The energy was unbelievable that night. It just, you almost couldn't take it. It was so strong, continually.
Ty said, he's like 100,000 people have claimed they were at the game, which is funny. Yeah. And then he said he hurried into the locker room. He didn't want to miss LaBelle's speech. No one was there.
No one was
there. Well, thanks for coming out. We could talk for hours about this, but check out the book, 100 Years of BYU Football. Duff and Brett, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Okay, coming up, speaking of the best BYU quarterback bracket continues. Who's moving on and what's today's matchup? This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
The trigger man, Steve Sarkisian.
A dangerous gunslinger here, Hall from Arizona.
Steve Sarkisian has led the way. Hall, nice play fake. To the end zone, touchdown.
Fakes all over the place. Sarkisian to the near side for the touchdown.
But he was able to thread the needle when he needed to.
Oh, what a matchup we've got today for you. But first, we got to rewind back to yesterday in our best BYU quarterback bracket in June, whittling down from the top 16 to the top quarterback based on your votes on Instagram and X.
Yeah, yesterday the matchup, Jim McMahon versus John Walsh, and Jim McMahon moving on with 97% of the vote.
So domination.
Jimmy Mack moving on.
Okay, today's matchup, as you just saw, Max Hall, the 7th seed against 10th seed Steve Sarkisian.
Played for BYU 2007 through 2009, led BYU to the upset of number 3 Oklahoma, and was a 3-time All-Mountain West quarterback. The guy was absolutely brilliant as a quarterback of the Cougars.
Perhaps the most competitive guy at BYU since Jim McMahon. Like, he just did not want to lose. Steve Sarkisian played at BYU in 95 and 96, passed for 7,464 yards, 53 touchdowns, nearly 67% of his passes. That was a very high clip even then. In 1996, 14 wins, second team All-American, won the Sammy Baugh Trophy. By the way, last quarterback to do that from BYU, led the NCAA in pass efficiency.
I have always said it, I still maintain, the most underrated quarterback BYU has ever had,
Sark.
Steve Sarkisian.
And we love Sark.
To vote, go to BYU Sports Nation on X or go to BYU Sports Nation Instagram story and vote in the poll. Voting ends tomorrow, 10 a.m. Mountain.
Okay, our question of the day is, where would you put BYU in the Big 12 preseason poll? At Kramer Hole on X is our elite voice of the day, presented by PAX, Healthcare Elevated. 13th. That number worked well for us in basketball last season, and BYU seems to do better as an underdog. I think they're going to surprise some people this year.
I like it.
Blaine Fowler said he has them 7. So there you go. Today's Rise and Shadow is presented by Mountain America, the official credit union of BYU Athletics.
We mentioned this in headlines. How about giving it to Claire Little, making the collegiate national team?
That is big time. With no Aaron Livingston on the outside, she's going to be asked to do a lot. And the sophomore from Southern California is going to do some big time stuff. Our thanks to today's guests, Blaine Fowler, Duff Tittle, and Brett Pine. Fun conversations, especially about the 100 years of BYU football book. I can't wait to read it.
Yeah, speaking of conversations, they continue 24/7 on X, Instagram, and Facebook. All of our shows on demand on BYUSN.com.
Sorry to Dennis Pitta, we ran out of time, even though it's literally an hour every day. Hello, for Jason, Jerem. I'm Jerem. Shout out to Drew Zimmerman. Join us tomorrow for a Big 12 Roundtable special. Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.